This is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today, I have with me in the studio Port Townsend writer Patrick Jennings. He's the author of more than 20 books for young readers, including Middle Grade, Easy Reader, Picture Book, and YA. His books have been honored by the Penn Center USA, the Women's National Book Association, the Chicago and New York Public Libraries, Smithsonian Magazine, Booklist Magazine, Kirkus Reviews, and the Boston Globe. In 2011, the Seattle Public Library awarded his book, Guinea Dog, the Washington State Book Award. His book, Faith and the Electric Dogs, is currently being adapted for the screen. Patrick, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad that you're here. And when I read that being adapted for the screen, I just went, so maybe we should begin there because that's a very exciting thing for any writer.
It's been actually, I'm cooking for a long time. About 17 years ago, the book was published in 1996, and a man who worked at Disney read it to his sons. And then he called me on the phone and said he loved it and he would love to see it adapted for television at that time. And then over the years, he kept adapting and readapting. He wrote a screenplay. He tried to sell it here. He created his own studio, tried to produce it there. And then eventually he got out of making television and movies and he handed it off to a Hollywood producer who has just signed Charles Martin Smith to direct it. He was the star of Never Cry Wolf, which is based on Farley Mowat's book, which I love. And it was a beautiful adaptation. And if you remember, he lives with wolves. He goes to Alaska. And, and so he became a director. He directed Dolphin Tale, which was an international bestseller. Amazingly, he read the screenplay, which was kind of thrilling on its own, just to think of a Hollywood director reading the screenplay of one of my books, and then signed on to make it. And then just recently, just last week, I got an email asking me about characters in the books and who I thought might be able to handle the narrator, who's a dog. And he's a Mexican dog. Mm. He lives in Mexico. So what do you do? Does he have an accent? Does he growl? Does he? And they said, do we get like a Johnny Depp?
What was your advice?
I said, you could get Johnny Depp. You know, not, how about... No.
And? Do you think
not
they
a Johnny Depp. I gave him some ideas, too. And maybe I'll read a little bit from it at
that
some
would be
point.
Wonderful.
I brought the book along with me, my old 20-year-old copy of it.
Maybe you should read a little bit now. I have many more questions to ask you about this opportunity.
Okay. At the time, I was reading a lot of Mark Twain and a little bit of Henry Fielding. And so he has this funny address where he... It's second person. So he's talking directly to the reader.
Always.
And it's a dog. Okay. It's a Mexican street dog who gets adopted by this little girl, Faith. And so he's lived on the street his whole life, has never been a pet. So these are some of his first experiences living with this little girl. And in the beginning of the book, he addresses the reader and says, I'm a dog. Trust me. I'll tell the truth. And so in the film, we had some trouble with that because he's not a speaking dog. He's a thinking dog. And so we wondered how to address that. And in the screenplay, I had the idea that maybe he would face the camera, look directly into it in kind of a studio setting, and say, I am not a talking dog. And, you know, and I'm being voiced by a famous actor. And just said that whole fourth wall breaking sort of thing right off the bat, just like it happens in the book. So this is a little bit later after he's been adopted. That afternoon, Faith rushed through the door, her eyes all red and swollen. She sank to her knees and hugged me and sobbed. Oh, Eddie, she said, I hate it. I just hate it. She has just moved to Mexico from the United States. I pressed my muzzle up into her face and licked her cheek. It tasted salty. The kids at school hate me, she said. The teacher hates me. I can't understand a thing anyone says, and they can't understand me either, she sniffled. Diego keeps making fishy faces at me. At that, she buried her face into my neck and cried. After a few minutes, she pulled away and tried to speak, but only big spit bubbles came out of her nose. Horrid, slimy goo oozed out. She wiped it all away with a swipe of her sleeve. Would you like to learn a new game? She asked, snuffling. The game was called Fetch. She threw a stick and I retrieved it. Quite simple, really. I caught on very quickly. Soon, I was catching the stick in midair. We played until Faith was called into dinner, and then, after she'd eaten, I tugged her back outside. We played until it got too dark to see. All that night I lay awake, thinking of fetching. The next day, when Faith came through the door after school, I greeted her, stick in mouth. Again we played until dark, pausing only for dinner. I was obsessed. Dogged. Retrieval was all I could think about. It got so that we played fetch every afternoon and always on into the night. I was manic. I would wait for hours by the door with a stick in my mouth, drooling in anticipation. Faith was a real trooper. She rarely denied me a toss. She'd stay up until she was fainting from fatigue, but still she threw. When finally she could go on no more, I would whine and whimper and paw. I slept with a stick in my mouth, just in case she should wake up and wish to play. I began having nightmares. In one, Faith threw a stick high into the air, and I waited and waited for it to come down, but it never did. I just stood, poised and intent, staring skyward, waiting. I awoke in a sweat. In another, I chased down a stick, and just as I bent to scoop it up, it moved. Again, I lunged at it, but again, it danced out of reach. It began to taunt me, to tease me. Yes, it spoke. I chased it and chased it, but I never caught it, never retrieved. And then one day, as if from a dream, I saw Fetch for what it truly is, a monotonous, pointless waste of time. I remember laughing at how positively nutty I'd been. Then Faith taught me tug of war.
Thank you. I am interested to know how you found your voice as a young reader writer, and maybe inform the audience about those different kinds of genres for the young reader.
Oh, sure. The different the forms?
Categories, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes children's writers get a little like bristly when they hear the word, you know, genre. They get it's just that, you know, children's writing sometimes gets called a genre when it's more of like a form. It has genres within it. So we have like picture books, and then we have beginning readers. And picture books, of course, can take many forms too. They can be for sixth graders, chock full of information. And then we have the middle grade, and I tend to write mostly for the middle grades, and that's about third grade to sixth grade. What we grew up, I call chapter books, we call them. And actually, that's kind of coming back. People are starting to warm up to that idea again. And then it's young adult. And young adults, of course, are generally read by younger adults, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Mm-hmm. A lot of times by the time kids hit 15 or 16, they're reading adult books. It's mostly the adults who are reading YA now.
Well, there's crossover.
There is. Yeah. And there's a good reason for that, too, I think.
Well, don't skip over that. That's really important.
It is. I didn't really read as a teen. And then, yeah, there's that.
So what do you think is the reason?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with we write for children, and it's, you know, how do you write for children? How do you write for adults? What's the difference? It's kind of a big question that's been asked for really a long time. I remember reading once a quote from Hugh Lofting, who wrote Dr. Doolittle, asked, how do you avoid writing down for kids? And he said, oh, writing down, I write up.
That's right.
And I think what part of it is the subject matter, maybe even more importantly, where you are writing from, where the voice is writing from. Are you a voice of experience looking backward? Generally, I think in those cases, you're probably writing for adults. Mm-hmm. Because we have experience and we can look back on it. One of the things about kids writing that I like is its immediacy. These are kids who are pushing forward in life, not knowing what adulthood even feels like or looks like, how to behave as an adult or anything. And it's scary. I think that kids are super brave. They have lots of energy. They're very active. And so you really have to get into that immediate voice of what's this next moment and this next moment. And things that impede them, things that come into their lives and are challenging, they're big deals to them.
I think that to write for the young reader and keep that in mind, that they don't have adult experience, and what they are experiencing is what their challenges are and how they're going to get through the day, the week. How did you recognize this in yourself? How did you know this was your audience?
Well, actually, I stumbled upon it. For one thing, I always loved kids from the time I was one. And as I grew older, I kept hanging out with younger kids. I have a lot of brothers and sisters who had children really young. And then I became a preschool teacher and a children's librarian, and I did story time for kids. So I've just always found myself gravitating to spend time around kids. And I think a lot of that is because I really relate to them. I ask what's going on with them, and or even not, just in engaging with them with what they're doing, maybe.
And that's one of the things that I think is so pure and has so much integrity in those who write up for the younger reader, is that being there with children and what they are going through is of paramount importance. It seems to me that ego is gone, but the profound way in which children's book writers care about our youth has always struck me. And I know that you do in school visits, where you are the visiting author in classrooms. And I also know that you've just completed a tour of those. You ask the child, what's going on for you? And our children are our teachers. So I wonder if you can kind of address what happens when you're in a classroom as a visiting writer, what you provide for the kids and what they provide for you and how it all goes.
I discovered it after my first book came out. My editor wrote to me and said, you know, you'll probably start getting some school visit requests. And I hadn't considered it. I was a librarian. That was what I did. I suddenly became an author and realized that there were these other perks and that they would actually send for me. I've gone all over the country in the last 20 years visiting schools. I did not think of myself as being kind of a touring author, spending a lot of time in hotels and walking in the morning and being treated like a very special person. That's really something. It's not just this ego boost, although I'm sure it is that.
Writers and librarians, too, very quiet, you know, professions. And then to find your audience person to person with you, face to face.
Yeah. Nice. And they have a lot of questions and they're very excited. Fortunately, I think all this time I'd spent with kids doing story time and everything, I'm extroverted with kids. I tend to be a bit introverted around adults, but with that's one of the reasons I love it, is because the minute I'm with them, I suddenly find like shyness just absolutely evaporates and I just want to play.
That's lovely.
I think adults really do. That's one of the reasons why, going back to the other question, why do we read children's books? Because of that. Because we want to go back and feel that immediacy, the things that we put in the books for the kids so they can relate to them. We remember. And we want to feel that all over again. We want to play. Excellent. So when I walk into the school, it's playtime.
That's great. And how do you play? And what do you do as part of your visit?
Generally, I because they want kids to have as much face time with me as possible, they put a bunch of kids into a room and I speak to them. It can be 80 or 50 or 400. But I always draw. I try to do as many different kinds of things as I can. I like to wander out into the audience and talk to kids individually, get suggestions from them. We usually create a story while I'm in the room. We have about an hour, and by the time we start with nothing, by the time we're done, I tell the whole story and complete it. So I give them some skills to, like, how do you come up with a story? How do you construct it so that it'll end satisfactorily? And I get tons of them in the mail. I mean, right now I've got a stack of letters to answer from kids
and
all
you
over
answer
the country.
Them.
Every single one.
Wow.
Even if I get a bag of them with all the kids in the class saying, thank you for coming. They all get a postcard. They all get an autograph.
Oh, one of the things that's true about kids, I think, is that they believe in you. If you've come and you've shared with them, they believe in you, and to not let them down, it's fabulous. Thank you.
Well, that's one of the win-win-win stuff. I go and they've all read my book. That's a win, not just for me, but for them. And then they have this anticipation, I'm going to read the book and then I'm going to meet the author and I can ask them all these questions. So then they're creating all these questions and doing all this thinking. And then I come in and we have this like exciting workshop and they get to meet me. And so the enthusiasm for literature suddenly is just busting out.
You know?
It's not athletics. It's not, I'm not a pop star, but they treat me like one.
Yes.
You know? And so suddenly like, maybe a writer could be
like hearing that.
A really exciting person. And I leave and I get all these letters and I know, and they said, and now I've read this book and this book and this book. And I never liked reading. Things like that. You get letters like that. Yeah, that bring a little
tear
to the corner.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. In case you just joined us, you are listening to In Conversation with Sheila Bender, discussions on writing and the writing life. Sheila is speaking with Port Townsend children and young adult writer Patrick Jennings about writing his picture books, chapter books, and novels.
What are your favorite kinds of questions, or the questions themselves that kids ask you?
Well, of course, I get like these boilerplate ones, like what inspired you to write and what do you do this, but they often will come right off the wall. I remember the first time I had a third grader say, like, what's your favorite genre? They could be very perceptive. Fortunately, I'm not going to be able to draw any up. I have a whole collection of my very special favorite letters, too. I like them when they actually talk to me about the text. Why did this character behave this way? Sometimes they will do a little fact-checking for me. They'll say, like, I remember once, actually, a kid said, the lights were out because of a tornado. Why did the doorbell work? Things
he
like
caught
that.
You. Yeah. Did you have an answer?
I did not. I just sat there frozen like a deer in the headlights. So they're really good, and they can really set you back sometimes with their questions.
When you said your first book, and when you were a librarian, now you were suddenly an author, that is the book that's under work for the screen.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll have the same title. But yeah, and it was a real delight because we purchased the book through the library. I cataloged it. I processed it. I put the tags on it, and I put the pocket in it. That's how long ago it was. And I shelved it, and I recommended the heck out of it.
Wow. Well, most writers get a thrill by just seeing their book in the bookstore, or maybe the bookstore window, or to actually do the whole process for your own book. That's exciting.
I was so excited about the library. I went online and started looking at all the libraries in the country to see if they had copies on their shelves.
What'd you find?
They like everywhere, everywhere. But the best thing about that is the bookstore is one thing. Somebody has to go in and plunk down $16. The libraries, you know, I know each one as a librarian. I know, you know, hundreds of times, just over and over and over. So it's just countless readers when it's in a library.
And you had one very special reader, the man who read it to, the Hollywood person who read to his child.
Yeah.
That's fabulous. And look, it's years now, right, since the publication of that book.
Well, in Connecticut, I just went, and a man has been teaching Faith and the Electric Dogs in his class for the last 13 years. Oh. It's been every year, he's a fifth grade teacher, and he has read Faith and the Electric Dogs to his kids every single year.
How gratifying that you get to see these people in person. So I know you brought an array of books, and I think the next one that you might want to read from is quite different since it's a picture book, right?
Okay, yeah. Well, this is my new book, and we've talked about different forms. A lot of times, as a preschool teacher, I kind of imagined that I would be a picture book writer. I don't draw, so I knew that I would be working with an illustrator.
Oh, but you draw pictures when you're in class.
I do. I do love to draw.
Okay.
I do. I'm just not talented enough to illustrate. Illustrating is such a different art than drawing. But I might one day. We'll see. I did some drawings inside of Faith and the Electric Dogs, just some decorations and such. But not like what Suzanne Kaufman did for this book, my new book called Naughty Claudine's Christmas, which Random House is going to put out in October. But I had written several picture books, and every time after Faith and the Electric Dogs, I would send it to my editor, and she would say, "This is not a picture book. The voice of the kid is 10. You've written another middle grade." And so then I would enlarge it. Like Guinea Dog, my book Guinea Dog started as a picture book and then became a middle grade short story and then became a novel. And that was true for my book Odd, Weird, and Little and my book My Homework Ate My Homework, too. It became kind of a thing. I almost thought like, okay, I'm going to pretend it's a picture book.
To get it out there to begin
just to
with.
Get it started and then it will go through the things. Yeah. But this book I've had, this is only my second book that was published. The first one started off also as a beginning reader, which is a reader for kids, a book for kids who are just starting to read. Those kinds of books have a real controlled vocabulary. Lots of repetition. Think Cat in the Hat. Those kinds of books. The I Can Read books. And so that's where it started for me.
So this
it was
is the second picture book.
This was the other one, Bat and Rat, which was kind of an homage to Frog and Toad. Mm-hmm. Only they were nocturnal and urban. And so there were three little stories, just like in Frog and Toad. And the publisher suddenly decided it was going to be a graphic novel. So we wrote it as a graphic novel. And then they changed their mind and they decided it would be a picture book. So actually, that was the only time I think I've ever written a book where the publisher changed their mind about what form that it would take. I'm not convinced, actually, that it shouldn't have been a beginning reader. I think it actually was.
I was going to ask you what you...
Because when you read it, it has the tone and the cadence and the repetition of a beginning reader. But this one, I started when my daughter was in first grade, and it's called Naughty Claudine, and it's about a girl who, as you'll discover, has ambivalence about Santa Claus. Almost sold it several times, but at the last minute, the sales department always nixed it for saying that nobody would be able to sell a book that was negative about Santa. So finally, 2 years ago, I said to my agent, "I want you to send it to a brave editor. I want you to send it to somebody who can say, I like this and I'm publishing it. Sales department be damned." And so she sent it to this woman at Random House, Maria Modugno, and she's been amazing. It was illustrated actually by Suzanne Kaufman, who lives in Seattle, who I've only met like through Facebook. I've never actually met her. It was just a coincidence that she's from Seattle. I'll begin it, and I can tell you a little bit about the drawings. Claudine was not fond of Santa. He watched you when you were sleeping and when you were awake, which was snooping. This is called an FNG, a fold and gather. It's not actually published yet, so it's like, as you can see, loose leaf. I like one of my picture book author friends calls them FNGs.
At least you're happy, so it's like a galley for you.
It is. He decided who was naughty or nice, and naughty kids didn't get Christmas presents, which wasn't nice. He landed on the house in the middle of the night, then snuck inside, which was rude. Claudine did not want him to come to her house. And there's this great picture of her looking quite devilish, and her little dog, who the illustrator invented, kind of wagging his tail like, "I'm in." If he doesn't come, said her big sister Maxine, you won't get any presents. I don't care, Claudine answered, though she did. She wanted presents. She just didn't want Santa to break into her home. So they go to the department store, and at the Polar Pavilion, Claudine stood in line for Santa. She asked Santa's helper to tell the real Santa that she'd like her presents mailed to her house instead of carried down her chimney. I'll tell him, the helper replied. Thank you, Claudine said, and walked away. I like that the illustrator here, too, did have a child in the line making a big fuss about sitting on Santa's lap, which I remember my younger sister was terrified of Santa, would never sit on his lap. And she had this kind of feisty personality. Claudine's a bit like her and a bit like my daughter, Odette. So on the next page, Claudine is standing by a pile of drums. It says, Maxine said it didn't work that way, that Santa would come nevertheless, because Claudine was not naughty. She was nice. Claudine thought about this, and then she banged. And so she starts beating on a drum. And then, of course, she goes through some very picture-dominated exploits of her trying to prove that she actually is naughty so that Santa won't come. And that's where it gets nice and transgressive in the kid. And that's where the fun starts.
All right. Well, when is it coming out? In time for Christmas?
October.
Mm-hmm. All right. In Thank October. You. But I had the feeling that you described as an adult listening to this. Mm-hmm. I'm back when the adult world made no sense at all. How can you be teaching me this morality? And then there's this figure Santa who breaks all the rules.
Exactly.
How is that okay?
Yeah.
I thought, oh, yeah. And it did have that wonderful immediacy.
We swallow a lot of things, don't we, when we want something?
Yeah. And Claudine, I don't know what she finally does, but she doesn't seem to.
We want those presents. And if we have to be nice to get them.
Mm-hmm. Or believe in Santa Claus.
Or think that it's okay for him to break into the house in the middle of the night.
I love that litany you have going at the beginning, but this isn't nice. This is a very good entry into her thinking.
I'm hoping it responds to kids because they mostly get very cozy stories about Santa. And of course, those children listeners out there, if there are any. There's some ambiguity about who it is actually who brings the gifts. It gives me an opportunity actually to deal with that as well.
That's what I love about children's book writers is that's that integrity at work. And the reason I think about this is because there was a writing group I belonged to years ago where there were four of us. Three of them were children's book writers and me. I was a personal essayist. I learned so much from their perspective. Mm. And I value it. And I am one who loves to read picture
Thank
books.
Thank you. It's nice for you to say that. When I first started, actually, I kind of felt that I was going to have to sit in the basement at conferences at like folding chairs and
because of being a
card tables. Book,
right? Yeah. Well, my very first book on writing was co-written with a woman who was middle grade, probably more. Mm-hmm. And she was fighting that all the time. Mm-hmm. I understand that very much. But
that used to be a thing and it isn't anymore. You used to get that. Are you ever going to write real books? I remember authors saying things like that when I was coming up, older authors saying that. I don't get that anymore because children's books are so read by adults now, and they're so loved, and movies come from them. And so it's Harry Potter, I think, really had a lot to do with that, with the beginning of adults like realizing that children's books could be really fun and enjoyable on their own, you know, even as an adult.
And some Disney work where they're careful to put in enough that the adults will laugh, where the children maybe will just enjoy. But
the levels.
Levels. I just wonder, there is a very famous and important nation, maybe even an international organization, the Society
SCBWI.
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 So that stands for?
Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators.org.
You must have a lot of people come to you, and I certainly do. Uh-huh. I have a children's book in me. Mm-hmm. I want to write it, but I don't draw. Or I this, I that, but I don't know what to do. And I always refer them to that organization because the people in my writing group all belong to that organization.
I do too.
And it is a place to go to learn the ropes, right?
Oh, it is. I mean, it's a great organization. There's lots of local chapters, and we have one in Seattle. I'm a member, and I get all the newsletters, and sometimes I post things in the newsletters, and I've been to conferences, I've spoken at conferences. I met John Sheska, and he's the guy who came up with the SCBWI thing. I'm not sure it stuck, but SCBWI is quite a mouthful. And the organization started by two wonderful people, and they just saw a need. And, you know, there's the Authors Guild, which you can also join, and I recommend that too because they can handle all your legal stuff. But that's really once you've become an author. And I didn't use SCBWI before I published. I found out about them after.
Yeah. Oh.
I did, yeah, because everybody – once you're a children's author, everybody says, oh, you must be a member of Skibbley. I went once, I was sent a bunch of manuscripts, and I was going to have 8-minute consults with the authors. And so I read all the excerpts that they sent me, and then I went into a room where lots of different people were going to be sitting with prospective authors. And they sat with me one by one, and I gave them notes on what they had done, which seems quite... It was a little, and not intimidating. I just didn't know what I could do in 8 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, but I was very, very positive, and you know, I always looked for the good stuff in their work. But those are kind of opportunities that they provide.
Right. I think it's really important because what I notice is that adults wanting to write for younger readers don't always have a handle on what we said at the beginning here about how the perspective of a child is different than the perspective of an experienced adult. Right. And it's something that I think you can learn from reading, but also from hearing it, the feedback.
I would say, like, what advice would I give to somebody writing books? Of course, the first one is to just read everything. Just read a lot of kids' books, read a lot of them. But the one, I actually gave a talk once at Skibbley about this other element that I think goes missing a lot. And that was one thing that there were no children at this conference. At all. And I think they would have loved to meet some children's authors, and they would have loved to talk about children's books
and find out why the doorbell can work even though there's no electricity.
And so I said, how many of you have read a story to a child in the last month? There were scattered hands. And so then I started saying, maybe engage. Read your book at the library. Volunteer to be a storyteller. Go visit your nieces and nephews. If your friends have kids, read to them. Sit on the floor and let them read to you. Just really get to know them, because it's a long time ago. I think for me, and I think one of the reasons that I ended up writing middle grade was 10 was it. I loved like 9, 10, 11. My life was beautiful.
Your own life.
Yes.
Yes.
And so I can go there and remember all of that and the challenges and everything as well. So I can become 10. In fact, it's very difficult for me to be my own age.
I love that.
It's quite a challenge to be my age sometimes.
Patrick, thank you so much for sharing your work, for sharing your success. I can't wait to see the film of Faith and the Electric Dogs. I want to be sure that people listening know how to find more information about you on your website and also your books. So tell us.
You can go to patrickjennings.com.
And let's spell it.
PATRICKJENNINGS. And you can order books there. You can find out about me. You can email me there. You can contact me there. Kids actually send me a lot of emails now. And if you're interested, if you live in Jefferson County, I also have a writer's workshop for kids, which I kind of wanted to mention. It's called Pato's Cave. Pato's a nickname I picked up when I lived in Mexico. So Pato's Cave, and we meet on Wednesdays. Kids can come and just write whatever
they
want.
Where is this?
It's downtown, 938
downtown,
Water Street.
Port Townsend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in the James and Hastings building. Up on the third floor, the nice view of the sea, and the kids come and I have couches and chairs and laptops, and we write for 90 minutes and I put out tea, and it's been going on now for 9 years, and lots of local kids have been in the group and from Bainbridge and around as well. And I have summer camps. So if you're interested in those, you can contact me
through
at my website.
Okay, and I'm sure the Writers Workshop in town carries your books?
They do.
Thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman.